On this episode of the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, it's just me, Taz Ahmed. Zara is off on a writing retreat, and I am in San Francisco for the She the People Summit. She the People is telling a new national story that rightly narrates women of color as the drivers of a new progressive political and cultural era. The She the People Summit brought together 500 women of color for a dynamic conversation. Join me for the day. Do you have a special woman in your life that has inspired you on your path that you've always wanted to give a Good Muslim Award to? We've partnered this month with Safwat Saleem, a Muslim American visual artist and graphic designer, so that you can do just that. Let us know on Twitter or Instagram who you would give a Good Muslim Award to using the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Our top three favorite answers will win one of three prizes from Safwat's latest art project called Art for Dark Times. He made a series of glow-in-the-dark posters, enamel pins, and stickers to serve as a daily reminder for anyone who could use such a reminder that we're not alone in facing this darkness. You can learn more about Safwat's art at www.safwatsaleem.com. Remember, to play along with the giveaway, tweet us or Instagram us using the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim with the name of the woman you'd want to give the Good Muslim Award to. Deadline is October 31st. This is Taz. I'm with my friend Jen Pei.
Hello, good morning.
We are on a ferry boat.
Yay!
We're in Oakland. We're going to the She the People Summit in San Francisco. We got a hotel at Jack London Square, and we're on our way.
Grateful, and if that conversation...
Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, the first Desi woman in U.S. Congress, speaking on stage right now.
Today is just remarkable. I walked into this room back there, the green room, and I was surrounded by all these women that I love, that I am inspired by, and I felt the energy of women of color together fighting for what we believe in, understanding that our oppressions and our resilience have driven us to where we are. And so I really want to say thank you so much for She the People, for being who you are, and to everybody in the room for being here. I never thought I would be in politics. I never thought I'd run for office. I was born in India, and I came to the United States when I was 16 years old by myself because my parents felt like this was the place I was going to have the best education and where I was going to have the most opportunity. And I ended up being, for the last 15, 20 years, an immigrant, civil, and human rights activist. And I only
My name is Kifa Shah, and we're at the She the People convening. Well, it's called the summit because we're taking all the way to the top.
We're taking it all the way to the top of the summit, not down low, where the gunky swamp is.
That's what she said. That is what she said. We're at that kind of a conference.
This is the momentum. This is the energy. Women of color, all other
Kifa, you're also part of Empower Change.
Yeah, it's really exciting to be here right now while we're doing the My Muslim Vote campaign because I'm just realizing and understanding how many women of color have been working so hard for so long to get us here. So long. Yeah, like you. Yeah, I just told Jen Pei. I looked at her and I was like, yours was the first campaign I ever worked on. And you were the campaign lead.
Was the campaign manager.
So that's how I became more involved in like civic engagement specifically.
It's all full circle.
Full circle.
Oh, that's tender. Tender moments.
Is that amazing? I feel like I'm the bad kid always in the class talking in the back, but I'm so excited to meet everyone.
Okay. So I'm Almaz Abinader, and I'm a writer and one of the co-founders of the Voice of Our Nation's Arts Foundation.
And Zara and I love you because we both went through versions of that workshop.
And I love you and Zara because you've taken that part of the workshop and spun it into something magical that everyone's paying attention to. And here's another thing. I was so surprised when you had a podcast because I always thought in class you were super shy and quiet. And here I find out that you talk.
I do talk. I only talk when there's a microphone in front of me and not a big audience.
So I know to start bringing a microphone to workshop. Is that what I should do?
Just small spaces. I'm okay with small spaces.
Well, really, it's really a wonderful show, and I'm so glad that you two have this this partnership because you're so different from one another.
So different.
But so many core values are the same and so many experiences go deep. So it's the perfect setup as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. I think this is so important in how we bring politics and pop culture and art together. Because if we're truly going to shift minds and hearts, we need art to go with it.
One of the things that Amy and I talk about is how the narratives are so important to the way we see policies. And as a matter of fact, she's coming to speak at one of my classes on how politicians use narratives and how writers can contribute to political causes by being kind of the carriers of those narratives to the people. So I think that this is all going to interweave kind of beautifully.
One of the things that we do on our show is we declare fatwas. Do you have a fatwa you want to declare?
Well, I have a big one, of course. I want a fatwa. Any of the people who think that there's nothing for them to lose right now, because there's so much to lose. So I want to fatwa them a little bit. But I also want to, fatwa, this is going to be crazy, higher education for giving up on saving itself and by running everything by underpaying adjuncts and not respecting the mission that they're on, and I'm really sad about that. So, but I want a good fatwa, my sister, for always being there when I'm trying to kind of get a clear understanding of what I want to do going forward. She's been part of the vision of my life, so that's my good fatwa.
Oh, that's beautiful. Zara's on a trying to give good fatwa trip right now. Welcome to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. We are in San Francisco today at the Shida People's Summit. So excited to be here. We don't have Zara on our podcast today. She's at a writing retreat, but we have some good replacements. We have Linda Sarsour here and Rashida Talib. Mm-hmm. So excited to have you both here. Oh my gosh, I was like streaming tears when I heard you both speak today. We're gonna hopefully cut that in.
No one replaces Zahra.
How's it going? How does it feel to be at this summit?
I think for me, I don't hardly ever leave my district and do things beyond, you know, social justice work in Detroit and Wayne County area. So being here with women of different backgrounds and unique names like myself, and so it's fuel for the movement. Even though, you know, many people kind of take somebody running for Congress as part of some different like animal or aspect, mm-hmm. It's not. It really is part of the same movement, and so it's really wonderful to be in a room with people that. In very many ways motivate me and give me courage.
Mm-hmm. And can we talk about can you say the thing about your name? You said this amazing thing in your speech today about like how they're going to have to learn our names.
But I love being in a room like this. You know, I think people just think like folks that run for office, like, oh, this, you know, that we don't need this. But we do, Amy. And we are probably going to need it even more when we're there in Congress. When Alexandria and I and Amhan and Jahan and Ayana. I love that we have these amazing names. Yeah, you're going to have to learn how to say our names.
Yeah. That just like resonated with me so much because I have a long, complicated name and no one can say it. So you're right. Like,
they're going to have to learn to say our names. I mean, I think so many of us continue to feel sometimes rejection or less than or dehumanized, even based on our names, our ethnicity, our background, our faith, our sexuality, you name it. It's always something at the forefront, and including our names, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as people hear our names, they're trying to guess, what are we? Where do we come from? Where was I born here?
Yeah.
All these things that come into play. And so for me, it was about all that. It's about those experiences growing up and people trying to figure me out based on my name.
So good. Linda, tell everyone who you are.
Sometimes I forget who I am, Taz.
Linda Sarsour. I'm a community organizer and racial justice activist from Brooklyn, New York. I'm one of the national co-chairs of the Women's March, and I'm also the co-founder of the first Muslim online organizing platform, Empower Change.
Empower Change, My Muslim Vote.
And a big fan of Rashida's.
Such a huge fan. I wanted to ask you, I have to ask, how was the Kavanaugh hearing?
We're gonna stop that shit.
Yeah.
And that's really the main focus right now. Like, I'm being short term, and maybe maybe people don't think I have a lot of foresight, but I'm focused on this. This is really the proof for us of whether the resistance is alive and well. And I was 11 years old during the Anita Hill hearings, and during Clarence Thomas, and so I was a kid. I was in fifth grade, and I remember a little bit about hearing about it. And I think now I'm old enough, and this is happening again, and I'm just not gonna let it happen on my watch. And if it does happen, at least I get to, and the women that have been brave and in Washington D.C., we get to say to our granddaughters that we did everything that we could to stop Kavanaugh, and that's really the story that I want to tell.
That's amazing. How do you feel about the Kavanaugh hearings, and how do you feel about going to Congress knowing that this is happening?
Well, I can tell you, just reading the articles today about Dr. Ford and my first job outside of college was at an organization, a civil rights organization, where it was sexually harassed for 5 months, and it brought back, I don't want to diminish people that really do suffer from true like PTSD, but that's how it feels, the sense of kind of reliving that. And when you talk about women getting discredited and women saying, why now, why is she coming forward now, I think all of that is so traumatic for all of us women, no matter who the perpetrator was or who they may be. But just hearing about Dr. Ford's experience now, less than what, 48 hours did she try to tell her story or try to get it out there, that she's now being targeted and being labeled. It just shows why it's so important to have Linda Sarsour and many other women there fighting back and speaking up. Because I remember telling someone, and they're shushed me. I remember telling a fellow woman of color, like, hey, this is happening to me, what do I do? And she said, stay quiet. And I think what Linda and many of the women coming to those hearings are trying to do is, like, that's not an option anymore.
Yeah, it's I want to get into the safety conversation, but I kind of don't want to get into the safety conversation on the podcast because it's so, at 18 Million Rising, one of the things that we get trolled a lot, we get called a white supremacist organization, even though we're all Asian American, but we're getting Soros money. It's so hard to be a Muslim woman that's out there. And I think Zara and I experienced this too with our podcast and just doing this work. How do you stay safe in this world with white supremacy kind of like bearing down on us right now?
I mean, for me, safety means security, and safety means, being around people that I trust, and safety means being in community, and safety means being around other bold, brave women. White supremacy and white supremacists and right wing and alt-right and whatever you want to call them are relentless. And one of the things they haven't come to terms with is that women are leading in this country right now, and that many of us are women of color. It is shattering their existence, really. And they're fighting back with everything that they have. They have money, they have resources, they have access to the media in ways that many of us do and don't sometimes. So for me, I don't ask myself a lot about safety, because if I do, then I wouldn't do this work, because I'm not safe doing this work. And I understand that I'm not safe, and my family understands that I'm not safe, but I still do it, because if I don't do it, then that silences people in my own community, silences more women in my community. So there's sometimes some of us in the Muslim American community, particularly some of us who are women, we overcompensate a lot of courage, even though we may have a little fear in our hearts, because we have a responsibility to inspire our people, motivate our people, and let our people know that they're worthy, and that when we fight for each other, that we are worthy of that fighting.
I think sometimes people automatically think, when you think about safety, physical safety, but it's also emotional. It can be very painful, especially because for me, I don't think, even as I hear about so many threats and stuff to some of my sisters in the movement, I, didn't experience it until I became in the national public eye.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I feel safe in Detroit. I feel safe among so many people that just get it. But social media has changed that, and that kind of keeping kind of away from those that want to harm you, want to kind of target you, is a little bit harder with social media, right? How do you keep them out of your home? How do you keep them out of your mind? But I'm trying to, as much as possibly, very conscientious of it. And, you know, I have an incredible team that are very protective and also just, you know, remind me that, you know, these are not the people that elected you, right?
Yes.
These are not the people that believed in the in what you stand for. So, you know, move forward, march on. The biggest, you know, kind of F you to those that want to do all those things is I exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I am going to be a member of Congress equal to
That's right.
400 plus other majority men members in Congress. So, you know, you just continue to exist, like Linda said, and you continue to move forward.
I love it. Okay, so I'm just going to read off like some of these myths and then you just tell me, give me a response. Okay, so something that I heard on Twitter was, we don't want to host a polling place at our mosque because we don't know how people vote. What's your response to that?
My response to that is you're not supposed to know how people vote. This is how democracy works in America, and that their opportunity to open their spaces and make voting accessible is something that is much needed in this moment. And I implore religious institutions, any places, you know, schools or whatever kind of areas where people congregate, to make them accessible. Because one of the things that our opposition is doing around the country is they're closing polling sites in some of the most marginalized and poorest communities in America. And the reason they do that is because they know that when people of color, when marginalized communities vote, we vote on principles and we vote for issues like healthcare, like infrastructure, like immigration, like racial justice, economic justice. They don't want us to vote. It's kind of like, I'm going to like channel my Palestinian brother, DJ Khaled. They don't want us to win.
They don't want
and
us
the
to
Muslims
win.
Need to understand that we need to win for our people. Mm-hmm. And it, any Muslim who is being an obstacle to us participating in democracy, is it needs to be called out and held accountable for
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And most polling places, it just has to be open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. So any mosque can actually be a polling place. You just have to register it with your local.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for so many of our faith leaders and people that are on these, you know, masjid boards of various masjids across the country, is that just like we do community service, just like we give back to our community by making sure that voting is accessible to everyone, that voting is seen as part of who we are as Americans. I mean, it is so critical, just like you're having a soup kitchen or you're doing an act of zakat, you know, during Ramadan. The act of saying, look, this is also a place not only for prayer and a place for giving back and a place for social services, but also a place where you can be civically engaged and exercise your right to vote. So they have to see it beyond that and have to see it that this is part of their mission as faith leaders.
Linda, maybe you can, this is a good time to talk about the My Muslim Vote campaign that Empower is doing.
My Muslim Vote is a campaign that is more about storytelling than it is necessarily about participation. The idea that we as a Muslim American community have values too, and we have principles too, we have issues that we care about too. And I think what has happened, you know, over the last 17 years since 9/11, we have been put into a particular box that we're a community that only cares about civil liberties and national security reform, or we only care about Palestine or Pakistan or Iraq or some of these kind of more foreign policy issues. And My Muslim Vote is an opportunity for people to say, my Muslim vote is for Black people. My Muslim vote is for health care for all. My Muslim vote is for immigrant rights and immigration. My Muslim vote is for my daughters. Whatever it is that when you go to the poll, what moves you? What takes you to the polls? And it's been inspirational. I mean, I love randomly walking into mosques that I go to around the country, and I walk in and there's like a My Muslim Vote full, you know, post on the wall. Randomly, I'll be walking like in the mall and I'll see some little kid with the My Muslim Vote button, and just watching conversations on social media. So we hope that people take this, use the hashtag Instagram, so, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and hashtag what is your Muslim vote going to be for in 2018? Like, what moves you? What takes you to the polls? Every other community has a narrative. Obviously, we're not a monolithic community, but we are a community that has a story, multiple stories, and we get to tell it through this My Muslim Vote campaign. So there's also a website, My mymuslimvote.org. You can check if you're registered to vote. You can register to vote. You can find khutbah talking points. So if you want your imam to talk about the importance of voting.
Oh, that's amazing.
We already did that work for you too. We also have all the deadlines for voter registration, all states, so that you know when to register so you can actually participate in the November 2018 elections. And there's photos and videos and media stuff so you can see what folks were doing when they were registering voters, you know, as part of the National Muslim Voter Registration Day in places like Colorado, in four different sites in the state of Florida, in California. It was beautiful to see Muslim volunteers across the country.
I was at
stand
the
up.
Women's Mosque, and I saw Kifa do khutbah at the Women's Mosque on the National Muslim Voter Registration Day.
Yeah, and we had friends of ours and allies and imams, including Imam Umar and many others, who actually used that day to talk about the importance of participation in the context of our faith as Muslims.
That's amazing. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Amy Allison, host of the podcast Democracy in Color, the voice of the new American majority. Join our conversations with today's best and brightest political leaders, strategists, and thinkers. Our mission, to take our country back with the power of progressives of every race. And we invite you to join us. To learn more, visit democracyincolor.com or follow us on Twitter at democracycolor.
Okay, welcome back. We are going to do our quick segments right now. So first of all, fatwas. We're always declaring fatwas on this podcast. I want to declare a fatwa on those toxic masculinity bars in front of Jeeps because I got into a car accident. Someone rear-ended me last month, and it's been a pain in my ass this whole time. So I'm doing a fatwa on that because no one needs those cars unless you're out in the Sahara or like in a forest or you're pulling stuff. There's no point. It was a terrible experience into a car accident. But alhamdulillah, I'm fine. We're good.
Alhamdulillah. Mine is let people eat whatever kind of bagels they want. We just had a controversy in New York.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Where Cynthia Nixon went and got a lox bagel with cream cheese and lox on a cinnamon raisin bagel. And it became the mainstream media for 24 hours. And I was like, let the lady live. So please let me eat whatever bagel I like. Because as long as I like it, that's what's important.
That's a great fatwa.
Recently, a woman came up to me and was trying to explain to me that the way I dress is really critically important right now. And because people know this about me, when I was in the state legislature and even now, I kind of wear my gym shoes a lot. Even if I'm wearing a suit or dress, sometimes I even take off my shoes. So I just want to do fatwa. I have no idea what the purpose is sometimes of heels. And then I just, you know, I don't get it. I actually think it's absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, you know, we got the heels and stuff. And sometimes I like it because I think you can
but
do the depth up really well if you got some really good heels on, you know. So I like the, you know, or like my girlfriend said, oh yeah, it's like tap dance. You got to have the right heels. I said, yeah, but I at the same time, for me to march on to the U.S. Congress in my like flat gym shoes or whatever, it's okay. So I can just say,
let Rashida wear her gym shoes in Congress.
That's right.
That's right. What about Good Muslim Awards? Do y'all have a Good Muslim Award to give out?
Oh my God, I love giving out Good Muslim Awards. So many Good Muslims in this country. So many that I, you know, I think some of us do get a lot more visibility than others, but there's so much more people in our community doing such fabulous, like amazing work. Like, I want to give a shout out. I'd like to give a Good Muslim Award to my best friend, Faiza Ali, who is a Pakistani Muslim American woman who has a director position in the New York City Council under the Speaker of the New York City Council. And not only does she have that position and that's important, but she fights for our people on the inside. And she's like this like 98-pound, small, kind of quiet storm that has done so much. And she also was one of the leaders of the New York City Muslim School Holidays campaign. And she's just one of those background people. She doesn't want to be up front. She's not the girl in the press conference. But you know what? She probably does a lot more important work than I do. And I want to give her the Good Muslim Award.
Yeah.
So mine's a little personal. As people know, I'm the eldest of 14. It's probably the one thing that most prepared me for public advocacy and public service. But my sister, Layla Elabed, who's actually at a health conference now, is, you know, just an incredible leader in really pushing back on sexual assault, not only of women, but even men among our community, among the Arab community. And, you know, she counsels victims of sexual assault, and she talks about it so publicly, and even using art as a poet and trying to push back against those that, you know, want to continue to shush people and not want to talk about it. But the continued kind of, you know, targeting of like women in schools and high schools, and she goes there even among male principals, those that are sharing the same faith as her, she doesn't care. She just like stands up to them. And so I'm so inspired by her.
I love it.
I know, she's incredible. And again, her name is Layla Elabed. She works at Access, and she, you know, is young, but very, very passionate about speaking about sexual assault very publicly.
Yeah, we need young Muslim women everywhere to be participating, and you don't have to be in the front of the camera all the time. The work being done behind camera is just as important. I think the award that I'm going to give is actually to our fellow podcast, our friends over at See Something, Say Something. They just shut their doors. They're over at BuzzFeed. So I'm going to give them a good Muslim award because they've been doing so much work getting out the word amongst the podcasting world. Do y'all have an awkward Ask a Muslim? Have you been asked any awkward questions?
Oh my God, like every day.
The reason why we have this segment, just to give a little background, the reason why we have this segment is I like to call it our microaggression awareness, because I don't think people realize how, as Muslim women, you get asked questions constantly and we kind of forget them. But this is our way of like remembering and just being like, no, this is actually our constant experience, is to get weird questions all the time.
Linda, you probably get it more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, I get people that like ask me questions in like real life, like they'll stop me in the street, or I'll get tons of emails of people asking me all kinds of weird stuff. You know, but we get the basic ones that people probably heard before. Like, I love when people ask me, like, do you have hair under your hijab? And I'm just like, really, people? Do we still have to have that conversation? Or, you know, other, like, people ask you, like, personal stuff. Like, they'll ask me, they're like, are you a real Muslim? Because you wear makeup. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Or, like, I don't know, weird stuff. Like, I've been asked things like, you know, like, when do you wear like your hijab? Is it like, do you like sleep with your hijab?
And of course,
like, of course I do. Yeah. It's very comfortable. I strangle myself at night while I'm sleeping with my hijab. But yeah, I mean, and often, and I actually answer the questions. I think that's important. Like, even though they're awkward, I just kind of like really people, but I'm always give people the benefit of the doubt that they're being a little like genuine with the question. And I still do answer their questions.
You know, I'm just fresh off the doors. So going door to door in a predominantly non-Muslim community.
I know.
Yeah. So I got asked a lot of crazy. Yeah. I mean, you know, stuff that might make it people uncomfortable, but like, do we have sex through sheets? I don't know where that came from. Another was, you know, I get asked a lot about, am I really a Muslim? The other, because they have a typical stereotypical thing, because I don't wear the hijab. I actually got asked by two Muslims were together you know, kind of tried to rate me as how Muslim am I?
Right. I mean, that's the title of our podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Yeah. How good are you or how bad are you?
So for some, and that's why I jokingly told a sister, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, I was like, I'm so glad you're coming, because now they get to pick. I'm like, I'm not as graceful. I'm not, you know, I curse like a trucker. I'm more, you know, rooted in growing up in a very urban city of just being who I am and stuff. And so people can choose, right? They can choose like which one they maybe want to gravitate towards as somebody representing them.
How incredible is it that we're going to have a Congress where there's going to be two Muslim women?
Yeah, we just doubled it, right? I mean, it's incredible.
Amazing.
It is amazing. And you know what's even more beautiful about it? I think people, you know, think I represent Dearborn, or they think I represent, I'm like, no, I represent predominantly non-Muslim communities. So did, you know, Keith Ellison and Andre Carson. But, you know, for Ilhan too, I mean, 70% white community that she's going to represent. But that is incredible.
That's
I think that's pretty cool that, you know, it wasn't people that shared the same faith or people with similar backgrounds. It was, and ethnicity wise, but it was people that believed in what our capabilities were, right? Believed in where we stood. And I think that is just an incredible story.
Yeah. It's a beautiful story. Yeah. The last segment is the Creeping Sharia segment. My Creeping Sharia, so I have a Creeping Sharia, is I've been watching a lot of TV. I've been watching Kim's Convenience, which is about a Korean family that owns a bodega, and it's from, it's a Canada-based show. So they had two hijabi women just walking in. It was just a part of their, like, normal narrative. It was very cute. The whole show is very cute because it's great to see an immigrant family be the center of a story. So that's my Creeping Sharia. Mm-hmm. I hope to see more Muslims entering in as background characters in all the TV shows that I watch.
For me, recently I saw... I'm not a Boston Red Sox fan because I am from New York. I am a New York Yankees fan. Yeah. So let us make that quite clear before I go into my little Creeping Sharia story. I saw a young Somali refugee activist named Hamdiya Ahmed who pitched the first pitch at a Boston Red Sox game. And it was, you know, generally speaking, it was like so beautiful. She was wearing like the whole Red Sox
thing. I love it.
She's black. She's a refugee. She's Somali. And it's such an all-American game. And here was this all-American Somali refugee that was doing the first pitch, and it was beautiful. And I did have a little like, this is Creeping Sharia.
This is. Baseball is so all-American that it feels like the most all-American creep.
I don't know. I'm from Michigan, so it's creeping everywhere. I think it was interesting. One of the residents came up to me, and they went hiking somewhere in the south or somewhere in the west coast. I don't know where, but it was, you know, and they end up on this hilltop.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, where are you from? He's like, from Michigan. And he's like, oh my God, you guys are like, you're leading the Sharia movement. And, you know, yeah, he was like, what? And because he called me to say thank you for winning. Because I know that guy was probably flipping out that you won. But I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people saw. I had not seen until after the campaign. I went away for the weekend with my family, and we went to a mall. It was like in Louisiana, and I go in, and there's the Gap ad hijabi girl. And everybody's like, you've never seen that? You haven't seen that yet? All my family. I was like, no, this is the first time I've seen it.
I love it.
That was kind of cool.
That's a great
really
one.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, we're going to close out, but do you have a message? I think one of the things that we do with our podcast is we are two Muslim women that are very different on our show. And what I usually say about the audience that I'm always looking for is I'm always looking for that one Muslim woman out in the middle of nowhere who doesn't have any access to Muslim friends. And that's kind of like who I cater this show to, who we cater Good Muslim, Bad Muslim to. So for those women that are out in the middle of nowhere that don't have this kind of community, do you have a message for them?
We love you, and you are part of a community, even if we don't get to touch you physically. And I just want you to be just unapologetically you in all the complex things that we as Muslim women bring to the table. Some of us are Palestinian and Muslim. Some of us are Palestinian Muslim mom. Some of us are from Brooklyn. Some of us are from other parts of the country. Some of us are progressive. Some of us are not. Whoever it is that you want to be, just be unapologetic.
Yeah. I think, you know, knowing that when I got elected in 08, going on to the House floor with 109 of all my colleagues, and probably 80% of them never have met a Muslim before, is that know that you're very unique and special. And I always felt really good that, okay, well, I'm the first Muslim they've ever met. And try to engage people, and like, you'd be very surprised just how much people kind of do want to get to know you beyond, you know, and see you beyond just your faith. But I got to tell you also is that, you know, don't change who you are. Like, I think that's what makes people uniquely special. You know, young people always talk about, like, I have to do this essay for college and I have to stand out. We already do. And that's a blessing and something they should embrace.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
So I know a lot of people saying, black women save us, you know, women of color out here saving us. No, let's just be really clear about what's happening. Black women are saving black people and black communities and marginalized people. Women of color were fighting for our people. And what happens when we fight for our people is that when black women are free, and Native women are free, and Latinas are free, and Asian Americans are free, and Palestinian women are free, and Arab American women are free, and trans women are free, then everybody's free. I'm not trying to say someone who has a lot more privilege than I have. When my people are saved, then we're all saved. So that's the first clarification that I'd like to make.
All right, we are at the end of the day. We are at the end of the day of the She the People Summit. I have Kifa here from Empowered Change. So, how was the whole day for you?
I thought that it was really re-energizing. I mean, Taz, you know, working for a digital organization, you can feel really fragmented. Absolutely. Sometimes. Yeah. So being in a room full of people who do similar work or just can speak to the work that we're all trying to do together is really re-energizing. And being in a room full of people that looks like all of the folks that we want to work with the most, and who work the most, which is women of color, is also really inspiring. But I think what was the best part about today and really made me feel very excited was that all women of color spoke today.
I know, it was so exciting.
Did you notice that right away?
I did. I think I was sitting next to some women of color in the audience, but I didn't realize how many people of color, like women of color, were in the audience.
Yeah, and it also struck me that how come I hadn't heard about a lot of these folks' work, right? It's like if they're not put into those rooms or if they're not put into those panels, I'm not really that familiar with all of this phenomenal work that women are doing out there. So that was great. Okay, I have to give you some anecdotes. Okay. This one auntie came up to me at the My Muslim Vote table, and she was like, why doesn't it say My Muslim American Vote? And I was like, I tried to explain to her, oh, well, you know, auntie, maybe some people wouldn't necessarily identify that way or wouldn't feel comfortable subscribing to just like a plain old American identity, or I don't know. I was trying to complicate it for her in any way that I could right on the spot. And she was like, no, we are Americans. And I was like, oh, my God. We get it because we're voting, so clearly we're eligible like to vote, which means we are part of this like American fabric, I guess. So it's just a lot. And then, you know, like there was this one, this was actually kind of terrible. There was this friend of mine who's an organizer. She's phenomenal from the Midwest. Like, she had all of these great pins on this keffiyeh, like the Palestinian, like, you know, scarf that folks wear in representation of like freedom and solidarity. And so on her keffiyeh, she had all these pins, and one of them was in My Muslim Vote pin. And somebody at this Muslim conference said, why are you putting it on that foreign scarf? You should put it on a flag, on an American flag. This is Muslims talking to other Muslims. And I'm just like, are we here? Like, are we gonna do this?
It's happening.
It's happening.
These are the conversations our community is having. We need to smash these perceptions.
Right. We're not all down. We really need to get down with each other. We need to understand what it means to be in solidarity. And that's a lot of the conversations that we've been having here with folks who are outside of the Muslim community, too.
Yeah.
I want to do Good Muslim Award to Tanzila Ahmed.
Stop.
For being... I'm so serious. For being the first person who looked like me to do a civic engagement campaign when I was a college student. I didn't know you, and I remember, like, I also probably didn't introduce myself to you because I was intimidated because you were a campaign manager. But I remember, like we were talking about earlier, when I saw you leading a campaign for somebody's city council seat, I was like, wow, this person looks like me and she does this work. And you should get an award for that.
Thanks. I don't know about giving an award to myself on my own podcast.
I give it to you. Zara gives it to you. In lieu of Zara, I give it to you.
Thank you. I'm crying over here.
Stop. But it's true. I mean, I think you were like that for a lot of people. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, yeah, I remember I used to read her on CPM Mutiny, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot. That's so true. You did a lot of those things. We keep forgetting.
I know. It's so weird when people keep forgetting, too. I'm like, I don't forget. I've been putting in a lot of work.
Yeah, you're right. And then now it's like, okay, I'm going to remind all of these people. Remind all of them.
I like this shine squad that we've created.
Yeah. What about you? What was your highlight?
The highlight from the day? My highlight was talking to Rashida. I got to say.
Yeah.
She was... Gosh, you know, when she was up there and she, I don't know, I just started crying when she did her speech. And there's something about knowing that there is a Muslim woman who's going to be in our American Congress.
Right.
And not just one, there's going to be two, because Ilhan Hussein, or how do you say?
Yeah.
Ilhan. And Ilhan and Rashida are both going to be in Congress next year, because they're both running unopposed. And Rashida doesn't wear hijab, and Ilhan does. And I don't. And in our interview, Rashida was talking about, she was talking about how the people that argue about who's the good Muslim, they have a choice now, because there's two kinds of Muslim women and who are going. Right. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool that we're gonna have one hijabi and one non-hijabi, and whoever has issues. I don't know. So often there's always like one Muslim doing one thing. Now we have two. It's incredible.
Right, and now it's not like something that's, I don't like how when it's sensationalized either, right? It's now going to become, inshallah, something normative. It's just, they're women doing these things, and they're also Muslim, like we always say.
Yeah, like, definitely like we always say. I think one of the other things is just, when I first started voting stuff, I didn't think that I would be old enough to see the first Muslim woman get elected into Congress.
Yeah, I mean, for you, it's probably a huge, it's huge, because you've been working on all this, yeah. So I can only imagine what it feels like for you.
Yeah, it's like wildest dream, but honestly, I don't think I was ever allowed to dream this big.
Wow. When do you think that it, like, became more of a tangible reality for you?
I think when I saw her speak today.
Right?
Yeah.
Right now is when you...
Yeah. Because I... Even right now, honestly, even right now, I'm just kind of like, I don't know if, you know, like, I knock on wood, pray to Allah, like...
Is this a fluke?
Is it not just, is it a fluke, but what if something terrible happens, right? Because I just think that Muslim women are so violated, and there's so much, they experience so much violence, that I'm like, oh, the right isn't going to let both Ilhan and Rashida make it through.
Right.
So that's what's kind of, that's like my conspiracy theory slash thinking that the world's going to fall apart before we have a chance.
But it's not a conspiracy theory to think that, like, people are trying to get at our communities.
Yeah.
That's real. So, yeah, I mean, may God protect them and, like, just make more women thrive in that way.
Yeah, I think for me, it'll be real when she has her hand on the Quran, you know?
Yes. And then hopefully you're there reporting.
Yeah, we should both be there. We should both make it, try to figure out how to go to Ilhan's and Rashida's.
And then I think, like, that, honestly, I mean, hopefully, and I'm so glad in your lifetime and in your imagination it can be that, you know, maybe in a few years we'll even see, like, 10 or more. Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Yeah. Because at this point, I mean, especially you would know better what's stopping us, right?
I don't think anything's stopping us anymore.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. We want to give a special shout out of gratitude to Amy Allison and the whole team at the She the People Summit for an extraordinary event. Also, a big thank you to our guests, Rashida Talib, Linda Sarsour, Elmaz Abinader, and Kifa Shah. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Surismith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
When my people are saved, then we're all saved.